Hey, everybody. Happy Tuesday. We're posting this on Tuesday for the Ask Me Anything episode. Blake and I take your questions only from those of you that are members. That is members.charliekirk.com, members.charliekirk.com. If you want to be able to ask us questions that we'll answer on air, we talk about those that can't have children, adoption, eugenics, low propensity vote ballot chasing, our event coming up in Detroit, and more. That's tpaction.com/peoples. tpaction.com/peoples. As always, you can email me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
They are counting on your surrender. If you give up, they win. But what if we look back and we realize we were just inches away from victory, and that's when we decided to give up?
Join us and thousands of American patriots for the summer convention that all are invited to.
You're going to hear how we're going to win in 2024.
With the biggest speakers in the movement, featuring President Donald J. Trump.
We're going to fight and we're going to win.
Charlie Kirk, Vivek Ramaswamy, Governor Kristi Noem, Dr. Ben Carson, Steve Bannon, Candace Owens, Lara Trump, Senator Rick Scott, Congressman Matt Gaetz, Benny Johnson, Jack Posobiec, and more. June 14th through 16th.
2024 is our final battle.
In Detroit, Michigan.
The great silent majority is rising like never before.
Join us for the People's Convention.
This is a new ball game, everybody. You send a message, we play to win.
Register now at tpaction.com/peoples.
Okay, we take your questions this hour. Blake is joining me. Blake, what do you have there?
We have, for when you get back, Charlie, we have this oversized Harrison Butker jersey. Some people said I should wear it. I refuse to wear it because I shall not stain my body with a Kansas City Chiefs uniform. But some people feel differently. They really like Butker, and he did say some nice stuff. But ultimately, he is on the Chiefs and therefore with the enemy. But we still wanted to show support for him. So this is here for when you get back.
But it's like XXL, I'm told. This is the pre-my PhD weight loss Charlie jersey.
Yeah, exactly. It's probably too big to fit on actual Harrison Butker. Like, the NFL kickers aren't really that big of dudes generally, but it'll be
great
for you.
I guess with pads, you have to expand it a little bit. But and so Daisy said she was told to order XL in my defense. That's fine. It's just you got to keep up with the PhD weight loss, right? 30 pounds ago. Would have been just fine. So, all right, let's get into some questions. Lots of congratulations over the birth of our son. So thank you guys for that. Just want to read some of them here. Daisy has highlighted them. And also, there was a question I know. So first of all, in order to get one of your questions answered, go to members.charliekirk.com and become a member. Let's get that on the bottom, guys, members.charliekirk.com. It is a growing community that is really exciting. Kathy says, congratulations, Charlie. I just saw the email and your post. What a wonderful gift. Joni says, oh, Charlie, I cried tears of joy when I heard the news. Sharon says, nothing better in the world than the birth of a precious child. Julie says, congratulations to your wife and the birth of your son. What a blessing from the Lord. Rebecca says, congratulations, Charlie. So thank you guys all across the board. Really appreciate that. But I want to get to one of the questions here. I received probably 10 or 20 emails about this. So it is this question here from Diane, Charlie, congratulations. Love your show. You mentioned a couple times on your show that in the Bible, there's a particular verse indicating God holds a special place for those who want to be parents, but unable to conceive. Being one of those couples, it would be great comfort to be able to refer to that verse periodically. If you could share that verse with me, it would be appreciated. So yes, there are several verses, actually. There's a couple in the book of Isaiah. There is one in the book of Luke, and I'll look at it in a second. The one in particular talks about how God will continue your name forward even without having children. In fact, the biggest Holocaust Remembrance Museum in Israel, and they do great work there, is called Yad Vashem. And that literally, it comes from a verse in Isaiah, which means God sustains, that God sustains you beyond not having children. And actually talks that God comforts you. I'm going to look up some of these verses here in a second. And I think it's very important. And Blake, can you riff on adoption? I think it's very important that our audience understands that adoption is a moral, not a moral good, but it's a moral celebration, that if you are not given the ability to have biological children yourself, that adopting children is a beautiful thing and a necessary thing. Blake, you and I are both pro-life. Let's talk about adoption.
Yeah, Charlie. So there's literally, there's just, in general, there's more people who actually want to, there's a lot of children out there, and there's a lot of people who are unable to have them. And one of the great things that we have in America is the ability to take a child who is not yours and raise it as our own. And it's actually an underrated thing that is pretty distinct about America. You have a lot of countries where that's just not done. It's virtually never done. And in America, it's always been a more acceptable thing. It's really become a normal part of life here. And I think we should see that as a blessing. That is something that makes it easier to promote a pro-life worldview, that we see that we are in it, that we are able to expand our understanding of the family beyond those who are strictly biologically related to you, that we can see, you know, the importance of adoptive family members. And I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but there's many thousands who do it every year. And it's a good path that people should be open to, and we should encourage making it easier, because the biggest barrier to adoption right now is not a lack of interest from prospective parents. It's that it's an enormously expensive and difficult process to go through, which is a little insane to think about, because all you're literally doing is saying, here is a child who is, you know, not able to be raised by its biological parents. Give it to someone else. And yet, of course, we found a way to make that, you know, something that costs a six-figure amount of money to do.
So here are some of the verses. The first is Psalm 113, verse 9. He gives the barren woman a home, making her the joyous mother of children. There's other verses here where it says in 1 Corinthians 7, 8, he exalts singleness as noble and from a ministry standpoint, advantageous lifestyle. There's also repeated verses in Isaiah and in Luke, and we'll be sure to post those in the show notes as well. So very important that even if you're not able to get have your own biological children, adopting kids is beautiful. It's amazing. And it sustains the pro-life movement. Very important there. Okay, let's get to another question here. Let's go to this one from Lisa. Lisa says, this might be a question for you, Blake. In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, how was Luther, Burbank, Alexander Graham Bell, et cetera, the fathers, places of eugenics, how are they shared worldwide? Seriously, always wondered how are they able to do that, even from their biographies in some instances. Do you think exposing them then would have been more difficult for the woke mob to get this poison in our culture today? Do you think celebrities, corporations, politicians, school boards of today will be able to bury the support of their transgender youth as easily? Eugenics, then as it is now, is a denial of the divinity of God's creation. Thank you and God bless you and God bless America. So the question is specifically is, the Carnegie Institute, Rockefeller Foundation, name a few, how are they able to bury their involvement? Got it. So, Blake, can you talk about the eugenics movement in early 20th century and how history has largely whitewashed this?
For sure. I think the place to start is, Elisa asks, do you think that exposing them then would have made it more difficult for this poison to get around today? And something that's important to go is this was not a secret at the time. Eugenics and a lot of these spin-off ideologies of it were very much all the rage in the first half of the 20th century. There were voices that warned against it, and they were often the unpopular voices, the more marginalized voices. G.K. Chesterton, who's a writer a lot of our viewers are probably familiar with, he wrote a collection of essays titled Eugenics and Other Evils. And he was not writing this from the perspective of, I am stating the popular view and warning everyone about this secret thing. He was writing this from the perspective of, this is the fad ideology of the moment, and I am going to speak against it because it is going to end really, really badly. And that, it very much is something you have to, it should teach us ideological humility, because everyone said eugenics is great, it'll make our lives more humane, it'll make the world better, and it was very much lonely voices stepping up to say, no, you're inherently devaluing people to the point that this is going to lead to horrible atrocities. And basically then the Nazis come along and they vindicate all of those warnings. They kill the disabled. They label entire ethnic groups as unworthy of life. They exterminate them in this horrible industrial manner that is just unfathomable. And yes, after that, they basically were able to, I don't know if I want to say cover it up, but they just sort of shrug and pretend it didn't happen. And, you know, now we see it all happening again, where the transgender fad, it was a fad. A ton of people believed in it. And it's lonely voices initially saying, this is going to lead to atrocities. This is going to destroy thousands of people's lives. And thankfully, I think we're learning the truth faster than we did with the eugenics movement. But yep, it is happening.
Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. A movement to change how we elect our president is growing, led by radical left-wing activists who don't think their side should ever have to lose the presidency again. It seeks to do away with the Electoral College as devised by the framers of our Constitution. Today, 18 states have signed on to overhaul how presidents are elected. That's why my friends at Hillsdale College are conducting a national survey on presidential selection. Hearing directly from informed patriots like you is critical. So please take their national survey on presidential selection today at charlieforhillsdale.com. I'm a huge fan of Hillsdale College. Their students are at the top, and they're receiving the best educational available today. It's America's greatest college, period. Hillsdale's educational outreach program on behalf of Liberty are just tremendous. I've taken so many of their online courses. I plan to complete them all. Now you can help Hillsdale understand the views of mainstream Americans on the critical issue of presidential selection, which will help Hillsdale in its future work defending Liberty. Visit charlieforhillsdale.com to start your national survey on presidential selection, charlieforhillsdale.com.
Okay, everybody, become a member today. It's members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. We have quite a few bit of questions here, and I want to make sure we get to almost all of them, if not all of them. If you become a member, members.charliekirk.com, you guys can then ask us questions and interact with us directly and also support the show. That is members.charliekirk.com. Let's go to Adrian. Good morning. You have mentioned a few times a population crisis, a fertility crisis, and our civilization collapsing because we aren't procreating. Can you expand on that? Because it isn't such a bad thing. I think it's not such a bad thing. Fewer people does give a break for the earth and doesn't strain our natural resources. Ooh, which I see as the concern for having only 1.7 kids per family is the pressure it puts on our Ponzi scheme called Social Security, which in my opinion is not a valid reason to want to have children. What am I missing? Full disclosure, I have two kids. They're grown now, so I did my part and loved every minute of it. I am pro-family and having children. I just want to understand the comments of why having less children is a crisis and why our society would collapse, which will take decades or a century. Okay, well, first of all, this mythology that it puts a strain on our natural resources is just that. It's a mythology. The Earth could take 10x the population that we have right now and still sustain itself. The amount of natural resources in our planet is quite remarkable. So that's, I don't know where that comes from. It's an environmentalist, earth-worshipping belief. But we're not going to have 10x our population. The world population is about to go down. Secondly, you should believe that human life is a blessing. And if you come at the belief that human life is a burden, then yes, the population going down is a bad thing. But think about all of the negativity. You have less families when the population goes down. Your politics gets really wacky. You have more people that are single. They're less likely to invest in society, less likely to conserve. Blake, what does this mean numerically? Why is it a big deal to have fertility rates go down?
Well, what's especially a big deal is not merely that they're down. I think if we had 1.9 fertility worldwide, the population would be going down, but it wouldn't have this feeling of like society is ending. What really stands out is we didn't just go from slightly above growth to slightly below. We've just sort of crashed and it's just kept crashing down. So South Korea was a rapidly growing country 50 years ago, and today I think their fertility rate is 0.7. So that is two-thirds of your population just vanishing each generation because they don't want to perpetuate themselves. And we see a lot of countries are getting into this death zone where they're at 0.9, 1, 1.1. Everyone just is going down. And so what you have is you have a society that doesn't, it's not showing up for the future. It doesn't believe in its own future. You're having the population go down at a pace that you previously would only see in like dramatic plagues or ultra destructive wars. The worst period if you're a German, the worst period in your country's history, it was understood, was not even World War II. It was the 30 Years' War, because about 40% of the country died just in the, you know, atrocities and starvation of that war. But now you might see the number of Germans go down by that amount just because they don't want to exist anymore. And it messes up your society to see that happen.
And I hate to overplay this word, but it seems that every turn our elites want to see the suicide of beautiful things through mass migration, through the mass money printing. And when you don't have children, your entire country is slowly committing suicide. You're not able to flourish. You're not able to actually have the same country that you once had. It's rather obvious. And remember, human beings are a blessing, not a burden. If you come at it from that perspective, you want more of us, not less of us. Blake, you make an interesting point in the chat, which is that we need to think bigger, which is that we're living under this really sad just malaise where people are, I think COVID damaged the soul and the spirit of the West more than I think we could ever recognize or realize. But so if we're overcrowding Earth, then settle Mars, Blake.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's a poverty of ambition. You see this a lot with environmentalists. It's always, if your obsession is with like shepherding everything you have and being as efficient as possible, it's understandable that that mentality can exist. Humans have existed in very dire circumstances before, but we've always had the greatest achievements of humanity when we've been ambitious, when we've dreamed big. If you read about the 1800s in America or Europe, are they obsessed with, oh, we have too many people and we're consuming resources too much? No, they're thinking, we're going to settle that wilderness. We're going to conquer it. We're going to build civilization up from scratch wherever we can. So, you know, they're going to go settle Oregon. They're going to go settle Arizona. They're going to go settle Alaska. We're going to build these huge railroads. We're going to build enormous engineering projects. That's what actually has made a lot of our homes habitable. Why are we able to have a huge city in Phoenix? Because we did massive engineering projects to bring water and so forth here that we probably couldn't even do today. It would be, there would be too much of an environmental permitting process to do it today. And I think that actually relates to the lack of children. We just sort of consider civilization itself a burden. There's a loss of ambition. And so what we should be looking to do is, no, we don't want to just try to get rid of fossil fuels and get rid of people because they're exhausting the planet. We should be thinking, we want more energy. We want more production. We want more people who are doing more stuff. We want to be good stewards of the planet, but that actually carries an element of mastery. It's not just surrendering. It's not dying away. We're not the elves in Middle Earth here who just want to cease existing. We want to leave our footprint on humanity. And to do that, you have to have a next generation. And instead, we have people who don't want a future for themselves, for their civilization.
Where does that come from? It's nihilistic. It's suicidal. It's dark.
I'm not entirely sure where it comes from, because you see it over and over. You know, 50 years ago, this was very popular. Like, it was the population bomb stuff where it was all these people running around and they would just say, the world is overpopulated. We need to crack down on it now. And the solution turned out to be technical innovations. We could actually grow 10 times as much food on the same amount of land if we applied our human ingenuity to do it. And it's kind of the same thing. We actually have the ability to go above and beyond, even here on this planet. I once joked, like, why aren't we trying to colonize Antarctica? It's just an icebox that we let a bunch of scientists sit on. We need to reacquire this, like, drive of civilization. I think that's actually why China appeals to a lot of people. If you look at China, even though it's a dictatorship, it's a country that's clearly hugely ambitious. They're going to build these huge subway systems everywhere. They're going to build the world's largest dam. They're going to build the largest XYZ factory. And then you look at the West, you look at Europe, and their big discussions are, how do we phase out our nuclear plants? How do we make our cities less intrusive on the environment? How do we live more efficiently? How can you should buy a small house, because if you own nothing, you'll be happier. That's so lame. And it's an infection that gets in people's brains, and they don't want to live anymore. They just want to, you know, eat good meals, go on vacations, watch a bunch of porn, and then expire. It's really pathetic, but it gets in people's brains.
Yeah, it is the true mind virus. The true mind virus seems to be the decline, the weakening, and the collapse of all personal ambition. And so I reject the premise. And guess what? Having children is very difficult. It is hard. It's a lot of work. It's death to yourself, but it's necessary. Elon Musk reissues warning that human civilization will end if birth rates continue to plummet. It's hard to disagree. And if you are able to have children, you should have children. It's good for society. It's good for humanity. It literally keeps your genes going. It keeps your impact on this world continuing. And it is difficult. You will not be able to go out to dinner every time you can. You're not be able to work out whenever you want. You're not be able to take every phone call you want. You're not be able to watch every TV show you want. But you do get something beautiful in return, something that is long-lasting, and something that involves eternity, which is your family. And it's a lot more important than just being able to go out to the trendiest, newest restaurant. What do they call that? Dink, double income, no kid. What loser mentality that is.
All right, I need to tell you guys about Strong Cell. It's amazing. With nearly a million units bought by you, it is more clear than ever that Strong Cell works. It works to combat fatigue, brain fog, joint pain, skin issues, and constant sickness. I've been taking it personally for over a year now, and it's changed my life. I take it in the morning with breakfast, and it helps me with natural energy so I don't have that afternoon crash. And it gives me the clarity of mind to do all that I do every day, which is a lot. If you're tired of feeling tired, struggling with memory, or constantly getting sick, then you have to give Strong Cell a try. I love this product because it has NAD. By the way, fact check me on this. Go do your own research on NADH, especially if it's mixed with CoQ10 and marine collagen. Strong Cell uses a proprietary delivery of NADH to make sure it goes straight to your cells to help your mitochondria. And since there are cells in every area of your body, then healthier cells equals a healthier you. The amount of people that use Strong Cell now, thanks to us, is remarkable. Over 1 million units sold. Don't take my word for it. Do your own research. Check it out. Fact check me. Oh, Charlie's just selling me a product. Okay, maybe you don't want more mental acuity. People say, Charlie, how do you do what you do? Maybe it's the NAD that I take. It's changed the lives of many Kirk listeners. Visit strongcell.com/Charlie and use my discount code Charlie to get 20% off your order. This is an emerging body of work and science that is showing that NAD and NADH really might be what your body needs in this contaminated, polluted, and poisoned world. Again, that's strongcell.com/Charlie. And don't forget to use special discount code Charlie at checkout to get a special 20% off just for Kirk listeners. strongcell.com/Charlie. Check it out right now.
Before we continue, I do want to play this amazing clip here. Let's get 88 prepped up. 88 is an amazing clip here, just about the power of Turning Point and what we are doing. Play cut 88.
Gallup poll indicates that more Americans are leaning to the right.
We're living in a very weird world now where the conservatives are the ones who seem to be very in touch with how people communicate.
They're becoming conservative in record numbers. They are rebelling against a kind of ideology on the left that holds them responsible for all the world's failings.
Turning Point.
Turning Point is very much to credit for that.
is big and it is very organized.
They've unleashed parents to object to material in the school library, completely innocuous material out of the classroom.
If you don't want to hear it in a school board meeting, why should children be able to check it out of the school system?
They started teaching kids, you know what, we're going to teach kids how to run for school board office.
Conservatives are seizing control of the American classroom. 38% of Americans say they're conservative now on social issues. This is the highest percentage ever.
Nobody works harder, nobody pushes harder than Turning Point, and nobody produces results like Turning Point USA.
Join the energy at our People's Convention coming up in Detroit, Michigan, tpaction.com/peoples, tpaction.com/peoples. We're going to be doing special members meetups in Detroit where you can meet up and listen to us do interviews live. We are doing that. So if you are a member, you are able to get special access. We're also doing some book giveaways and more. That's members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. Here's one. Hi, Charlie. Love the show and all the work you do for the country every day. I agree with you that voting is very important. I believe it's my duty as a citizen and plan on voting this year. I voted in 2020 as well. However, I hope you voted in 2022. However, I'm in deep blue trenches of Oregon. And in light of that, my sincere question is, how important is it to get people to vote? I'm very passionate about saving our country, but is dedicating a lot of time to get out the vote in Oregon worth it since we are a solid state, not a swing state? Yes, of course it is for other things such as House races, state races, county races. Absolutely. But Blake, can you inform the audience that the more liberal you are, the more likely you are to vote? This is a total sea change. I hope people understand this, that Democrats basically do politics as a hobby. They're more likely to give money to political candidates. They're more likely to vote. They're more likely to engage in off-election cycles. Please, Blake, I think it's super important.
For sure, for sure. And as you say, it's a bit of a shift because certainly around 2010, people probably remember Barack Obama wins in 2008 pretty decisively. And then just 2 years later, whips back. The House swings really Republican. And at that time, the dynamic was, oh, a presidential election year gets a lot of low propensity voters out. They lean left. Then in a midterm, you get the more conservative, more consistent voters. A lot of that was Republicans were really stronger with older people, and older people were really consistent about voting every single election, no matter what. But especially post-Trump, we've seen this revision. A big cause of that revision is Trump appeals more to working class voters who were lower propensity overall. He appeals a little bit more to Hispanic voters who they have lower turnout overall. And now in this election, it seems he's appealing much more than past Republicans to young voters who are lower propensity overall. And what you've seen on contrast is, you know, Democrats are still competitive. And a big reason they are is think about who Trump is really unpopular with. He's really unpopular with urban professional class. This used to be a more competitive demographic. That's kind of why in 2016, Trump lost the popular vote by quite a bit, but he wins the election. It's because he's less competitive in a lot of these places that are always going to vote blue, but past Republicans used to be a little more competitive. So maybe Mitt Romney, he does okay in Northern Virginia. He does okay in Los Angeles. He does okay in some other like rich metro areas, but he still loses the election overall. Now you see this huge swerve where the urban professional elites who see Trump and they think he's really icky, they think he's dumb and his supporters are dumb. They've swerved to the left. Republicans used to dominate higher income voters. Now higher income voters in a lot of places are competitive, or they're even a blue demographic. We kind of have Democrats as the plutocratic party, which they just were not in the past. They were not to the same degree. They were maybe the party of cultural elites, but now they have economic elites voting Democrat as well. And those people vote at high rates. And they're also just, they're really into politics. As you say, they donate a lot. They write letters a lot. They join and start organizations a lot. Some of this is because it's a substitute for conventional religion. So it becomes their religion. Instead of going to church on Sunday, you go to your pro-gay marriage rally, your pro-BLM rally over the weekend. They're really engaged. They care a lot. They follow up on stuff, which matters a lot. They're the ones who don't just demonstrate for something, but they nag their lawmakers about it over and over again. And they read blogs like Keeping Up on What's Going On. None of this is to say that this doesn't exist on the right. Obviously, a lot of our fans are people like that, but it's more common on the left.
Yeah, and also they're wealthier.
And they're wealthier.
That's what's really important.
Yes.
Is that they, that, for example, an average Democrat who lives in downtown Chicago and they're earning $280,000 a year, $500 a month spread amongst five Senate candidates is not a ton of money for them. Right. So, and politics becomes a consumption hobby for them and they feel as if they're involved, and it is substitute religion. That's exactly right. But the inverse of that is now Republicans have an opportunity to win the lower propensity voters, which there actually are more of. So it's this opportunity, just harder to find them, harder to get them out. I want to play a piece of tape here. But Blake, you have cautioned, like, wait a second. Okay. Trump is winning with people that don't vote. How do you actually get them to vote? Because then if they don't vote, then you don't win. So let's go to cut 155.
I'm here to support Trump.
Why you support Trump?
Because Trump has a good economic plan for the country. And he also he proved to the world that he could do it. And he did it for 4 years, so.
What does it mean to you that he shows up in the Bronx today?
More money in my pocket next 4 years.
And what does it mean to you that he showed up in a blue state, New York?
I feel
today?
Like he has guts. He's a New Yorker. I don't live too far from where he grew up. So I'm like, I have to go. I have to go show up for Donald Trump. He's in New York. Like, he has the guts.
I'm a Bronx resident. And actually, I was a Democrat. But actually, I'm supporting Trump.
Then I want to get to 156 here. But Blake, that is kind of the low prop picture. Was a Democrat. Those folks don't strike me as people that would like donate money to a certain candidate. It's like very transient, but we want them. So the trick is finding them, organizing them, and mobilizing them.
Exactly. And it's something we're just going to have to learn it on the fly, because we are used to a reality where a high turnout race is something that's just going to be disadvantageous to us. It's something that the Democrats liked and we kind of disliked. We were fine with, let's keep the election low key. Let's not have everyone turn out. Let's just have the people who are really, really intense and committed. But now it's different. We just want to learn. Like, we want to understand, yes, if we go out there and nag this low propensity person and, you know, make, you know, do the work, get them registered, get them a ballot, make sure the ballot is turned in, this can produce a much bigger return for us in the past. So kind of to circle back to Hannah's question, one reason you really want to do this is we just might be surprised. There's always that race that's not expected to be close, that is close, or even goes the way you don't expect. Another factor is, remember, there's a national popular vote, and Democrats will always justify every power grab they want to do by saying, oh, we won the overall popular vote, or this or that landslide justifies us doing it. Everything operates on the margins. We want to send the message that we exist, we vote, we have our own agenda. And also, I think what I'll say for Hannah is she'll find politics more enjoyable if she's doing the work of turning people out. It's what builds a movement. It's what creates momentum for ideas. It's going out there, getting people on your side, getting them to agree with your cause, getting things done. This is why the left enjoys politics so much. It is actually actively kind of addictive to do for them, because they see their effort
it is.
Results.
And I also just want to say, though, it's good that our side cherishes things more than politics. Yes. That family and business and relationships should matter more than your congressman. However, the more that when the decent people start to care about politics as much as the indecent people, good things are going to start to happen.
Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Did you know that 80% of adults take supplements to feel our best, right? Well, one thing your dog can't do without you is improve their diet or health to feel their best. That is why I believe Ruff Greens could dramatically help your best friend by adding what is missing to their diet like you do. Ruff Greens is helping thousands and thousands of dogs feel better and live longer, including my dog, Mr. Briggs, who loves it. Naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, who created Ruff Greens, is also an airborne ranger and Green Beret, an amazing background. He loves dogs and is on a mission to help as many as he can. Dog food is dead, and Rough Greens supplements your dog's food with existing vitamins and minerals, omega oils, digestive enzymes, probiotics, and antioxidants. Dr. Black is offering you a free Jumpstart trial bag. So fetch your free Jumpstart trial bag. Just cover shipping. Don't change your dog's food. Just go to roughgreens.com/Kirk, RUFFgreens.com/Kirk.
Let's get to this question here. Charlie, there's this article here that calls you and Turning Point grifters because you guys are doing ballot chasing. It doesn't work, for example, in Panama and Argentina because they want paper ballots. I don't want to read this whole question. Do you have a rebuttal? Yes, I would love paper ballots. I wish we could go back to just paper ballots and one day voting. It's not going to happen anytime soon. So how are we going to get that done? You have to win elections. If you don't win elections, you are not able to get those things done.
Yeah, it's just, it's like, imagine if you're in baseball or something and you think the rules of baseball favor pitchers too much over hitters. And you think the way our team would be better is if it favored hitters more. Well, you play the game by the rules that exist and you can try to change the rules in whatever way you want. And in America, as it happens, the only way that you can change any election rules is by winning elections and then being in power and changing the rules. And the rules right now are, it's a very turnout-driven race. It's a race where you can vote early. It's a race where there are easy absentee ballots. It's a race where, unfortunately, the election lasts about a month. So, accepting that the election lasts about a month, how do we compete? Well, it would probably be good to copy what Democrats have done, because it has won them elections that it seemed like they were not going to win. So you can either call us grifters and go back to losing, and then after we lose, complain that it's all because the thing is rigged and that we should have paper ballots, or you can go do the thing that might allow you to get paper ballots.
Yeah, if you don't have political power, you can't change it. It's that simple. Let's get to a question here. Let's see. There was a really good one about debate prep. Yes. So we're actually formulating an op-ed together. We're going to be doing a whole show on this. Here's my piece of advice for Trump. I'm going to see Trump at our Turning Point Action Convention in Detroit. I'm going to tell him this. Don't interrupt Biden and talk about your presidency being better than his presidency. By the way, he recently did an interview with 12 News in New York. I sent it to the chat. I don't think we had a chance to cut it up. His answer when she said, okay, what are you running on? He said, very simple. When I was president, things were better. Less war, better economy, more stability. We had a border. It was amazing. Blake, that contrast, going back to the Grover Cleveland, Benjamin Harrison kind of back and forth, that is the winning message for Trump. Not getting too much into the weeds on, you know, things that people don't matter about. I was a better president than you. Everybody knows it. Let me back into the White House and we'll get our country back. Blake, how could this debate go wrong for Trump?
Yeah, so the rules as it currently sounds are there's no audience, and a big thing is Biden complained that Trump interrupted too much in 2020, so they're going to have the mics off when it is not their turn to respond to a question. So if you go over time, it turns off, and if you are interrupting them, your mic won't be on. So I suppose maybe they would hear it in like a muffled way because there will be other microphones, but it'll be, you won't hear it clearly for sure. And so I think what the Biden team might be counting on or hoping for is that Trump will be, he'll just go back to old habits and he'll be pretty aggressive and combative and he'll try to butt in with side comments while Biden is saying something, but it'll be muffled and it'll make him look bad. It'll make him look like a sort of angry clown and it won't be as decisive. And I think they're hoping that that occurs. So I think for Trump, if Trump could shock them by showing up and actually playing mostly by the rules of the debate, this is just a guess. All predictions wrong or your money back. But if he just stands there and he's like, okay, Biden, tell us your thing. Tell us why you're a great president. And Biden suddenly has to talk for 2 minutes at a time off the cuff. He can't just do the easy thing. If you watch the first 2020 debate, the one that Trump, I think by consensus, didn't do great in, what Biden would do is he'd start talking. Trump would be really aggressive when it interrupt him. And Biden would just look very dismissive and he'd just be going, you're the worst president ever. You're so pathetic. You're so disgusting. He would just look like this angry, disappointed father figure. And if instead you're just saying, oh, Biden, give us your pitch and we're not going to interrupt you, suddenly you're stuck with, this is a confused 80-year-old man who doesn't have a good track record. And he's just going to try to talk about...
Here's my fear. Here's my fear. And Trump, They're going to workshop, and Biden will be prepared with one-liners to try to troll Trump to get him off his game. So he has to be ready for that. In his debate prep, he has to be ready for the, oh, and you know I beat you last time, Donald. You know, something like that that could just set him off. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.